Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. College baseball is around the corner, so we are back. This week, we are talking best stories from the offseason, looking ahead at best stories coming up in 2022, and talking about the preseason top 50. Let's talk college baseball. Kyle, it's good to see your face. It's been a while. We are back. Yeah, it's 3 weeks until the college baseball season, and I think that it's a perfect time to bring the podcast back.
Hell yeah. Yeah, we're pumped to have the college baseball season back around the corner. It's been a long offseason that has been dark and full of terrors, and also a lot of changes that we'll get into today, I think.
You know what I'm looking forward to about the 2022 season? I am looking forward to the fun name, image, likeness deals that we get. Like, I want to see Waffle House sponsoring bullpens. Like, I want to see the, like, I already have seen, like, NFTs for, like, athletes on Twitter. I don't even know what that means, to be honest.
I don't either.
I'm not really sure what NFTs do. Like, I think the answer is nothing. But, like, somehow some college athlete's getting paid for it, so that's fun.
Yeah, I want to see like some barbecue restaurant in Fayetteville sponsor the hog bullpen. Like, that'd be really fun. Or yeah. Like, I don't know, probably some, like, pun out there.
I feel like, yeah, if you go to some cities in the South, I feel like a college baseball player having their name behind a barbecue place, like, that's going to hold some weight. I feel like college baseball players know a thing or two about good barbecue.
Yeah, or like, I don't know, some hand warmer for like some guy on the bench. He could be the bench warmer. I don't know. Like, there could be, I don't know. He's not the face of it, but who knows?
Let's get Big League Chew in on this. You know,
yeah.
There's so many opportunities here. So that was one of the big things in the off season. And Kyle, you pulled up some interesting data showing that it looks like college football players, not surprisingly, are the ones getting the most number of deals. But I think, college basketball was kind of the sport in terms of number of deals was pretty comparable to college baseball.
Yeah, and I saw women's volleyball also, which is cool.
All right, yeah, so I think that kind of makes sense. College baseball is, you know, not quite college football level. I think the thing that surprised me about that data you pulled up is it looks like so far college baseball players aren't hauling in quite as much money as some of their counterparts. So I'm curious kind of what the causes are for that. Maybe it's just publicity. I don't know.
Yeah, publicity. And football was like the first main sport that happened when, like, after the stuff was announced.
There hasn't been a college baseball season yet. They'll probably make more money this in the spring than they will in the fall.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also just like bigger stars, I feel like, in college football, because there are fewer people. Well, now there's more people on the team, but there's fewer stars that just have the chance to shine throughout the year. Like, quarterbacks are going to get a lot because they're the face of it. So yeah, I mean, I think there was a rumor that Bryce Young from Alabama was getting like $1 million NIL deal, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But not too bad of a haul.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure like everyone on the Georgia football's team value just went up like 20% after winning the national championship. Lo and behold, another SEC team wins the college football playoff. And, you know, championship game was pretty solid, but some ho-hum semifinals. So
yeah,
another bit of evidence that shows that college baseball's playoff is better than college football playoff.
I did see that there was the last, like, the number one team in college basketball is an SEC team. Two teams in the college football playoff final were SEC teams. And the last team to win the College World Series was another SEC team, and yep, it was their first time. So, like, SEC is obviously doing really well right now. Women's basketball, South Carolina is really good. It turns out when you put a lot of money into sports, good things happen.
Yeah, that's going to be a nice little teaser for our preseason top 50 coming up. Spoiler alert, we don't have an SEC team number one, and we heard it from some fans on Twitter about that, but you know what, we'll defend ourselves a little bit there, and you know, we might be wrong. You know, preseason rankings are always a little bit of crapshoot. But before we get there, let's talk a little bit more about big stories from the offseason. Conference realignment was a big one. Honestly, I don't know if I've kept up. I think you like to really to keep up, you need the like strings on the wall, like murder mystery with all the movement that's been happening. Obviously, some of the biggest movement was the Big 12 being picked apart of their most prominent teams, Texas and OU heading to the SEC, which led to this domino effect of Houston and BYU and all sorts of things. I think, though, I am really interested to see what happens as the SEC gets even more concentrated with college baseball teams. I mean, Texas, particularly, their history speaks for itself. OU, very solid baseball program. I'm curious to see how they can compete year in and year out in the SEC. I think it's going to be a little bit tougher for them. But with what the Big 12 is gaining, I mean, Houston has a nice history of college baseball. They've been down a little bit in the last couple of years. I think that's a really good fit. I think it's going to be interesting to see how they recruit being elevated into a higher tier conference. But I think my big takeaway is, well, beyond the, I don't know if I kept track of everything, is I'm not sure when all this is going to happen. I mean, it seems like tons of money is going to be changing hands, and it might be as soon as next year. It might take a few years for all these dominoes to fall, but change is coming.
Yep. Yeah. My understanding is that at least with the Big 12, there's a chance that it's going to get bigger than it is right now for maybe a few years, which would be kind of awkward to have Texas, Cincinnati, UCF, and fourth team. I cannot remember. Do you know?
Nope.
Oh, no.
Wait, did you say BYU?
I didn't. Yeah, BYU.
BYU.
So, yeah, with those four coming in before Texas.
I can't believe BYU was let into the Big 12. I thought forever, like, because of, like, Sunday's issues, I just thought that was a non-starter. But I don't know. They bring in an audience, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be weird. I mean, we know they have a baseball team because they have one of the best views for a baseball stadium in the West Coast. So, yeah, they're just going to have to work around that, I guess.
I actually think BYU is going to be a sneaky good fit in baseball in the Big 12, because I think they've been consistently a top 50, top 75 type program and could have had an argument for some at-large bids over the years, but it was just kind of, it's hard to do that without being in a major conference. I think you're going to see BYU's baseball program on the up and up because of this move.
I think that will help the Big 12's depth, like kind of fill out some of the bottom, because the Big 12 has not had some like top end baseball talent besides like Texas, whatever, in the last few years. So there's been like kind of a gulf, but now it'll kind of help fill out some of the depth to get, like, I don't really know how good Cincinnati is, but they went to the tournament a few years ago for winning their conference tournament. So it'll help win, like, with the loss of Texas, who's one of the best programs, probably the best program of all time. And then OU, who has at least one national title. So that will help, I don't know, kind of fill out some of the depth, and we'll have to get Phil up on here to talk about that later.
Yeah, from the 10-12 podcast. I think that podcast is going to have to change its name to the 10-12, 14-12 podcast, 16. Or whatever is happening with the conference. Which is going to be more offensive in Big 12, the out in Lubbock with Texas Tech Stadium, or Mile High up in BYU with the balls just flying?
That'd be awesome.
That's a series I want to see. I want to see Texas Tech at BYU, and I want to see that this year. I want to see that right now. I would love to see Jace Young go up to elevation and hit like a 500-foot home run at BYU. That needs to happen.
Absolutely.
So I think let's move forward. Let's move forward to 2012. I think 2022. Man, I've gotten that year
2012
wrong twice, 2020 and 2012. You know what? In the off season, I also turned 30. And I think, you know, once you're past 30, you're just on mental decline from there.
Old.
So in 2022, I think a couple of really interesting storylines are playing out. I think let's talk first about the Big 12. We've been touching on them looking way into the future. I want to think a little bit more about what's going to happen in the Big 12 this year. So we're going to be looking at the top 50 in a little bit. We have Texas at number one. After that, there's a little bit of a gap, and I think there's a good argument for a few teams being the kind of second favorite in the Big 12. You have Oklahoma State, which is a consensus top 25 team. Texas Tech, similarly, a consensus top 25 team, but much lower in the top 25 than they've been used to starting the season. TCU, just total wild card. Obviously, they still have talent. They lost their head coach. I think it's a team that should be talented enough to compete towards the top of the Big 12. But I don't know. Anytime you're in a major conference with a new head coach who has been a head coach in waiting at TCU for a few years, I don't know. I'm skeptical, I guess I would say. I think that's a little bit of a widely held view. We're all kind of curious to see what happens in the post Schlossnagel era at TCU. I mean, what do you think, Texas Tech? Are we too low on them? Are we going to look back at the end of the year and think, wow, they obviously had a top 10 draft pick in Jace Young, and, you know, Tadlock always does the like magician's job of putting together a pitching staff, even when you're not quite sure how he's going to use them, and pulling guys out as closers or as number three starters that you just never heard of or whatever. And Tadlock has a history of that. But, you know, looking at that staff right now, I'm not super confident. I think this is a kind of a big year for Texas Tech.
Yeah. I mean, and the guy who I would want as like leading my program is out there, and Tim Tadlock. He's been there for a long time. He's had a lot of success doing exactly this, taking teams that don't have it. I mean, that have talent, but aren't picked at the top, and making them do well. So I think they are probably, in my mind, leading the pack for second in the Big 12. But I mean, obviously they could surprise us if they get the right teams out there in Lubbock this year.
Yeah, so right now the coaches heading into the preseason had them pick third overall. Texas was number one. Oklahoma State was number two with one first place vote, which I'm not sure. Maybe that was David Pierce. I don't know. I don't know how that worked out. But Oklahoma State was number two in the conference. Tech was picked three by coaches. That's the same order we have it currently in our top 50, but we have Oklahoma State and Tech kind of close. I think that, yeah, there's an argument to be made that Texas Tech could be a step ahead of Oklahoma State in the preseason. But I don't know. I mean, the way that Stanford went into Lubbock and won that super regional last year, like, I don't want to be alarmist, but like, that doesn't happen, right? Like, Lubbock, like, Tech had won like five straight supers at home or whatever. Like, this is like, that is like Tech's like route to the College World Series. Is they have a home regional, they have a home super because they earn it, because they do well in the regular season, and then they go to Omaha. Like, that's just like the Tim Tadlock's recipe for a successful Red Raider season. And Stanford, like a team that had an abysmal shortened 2020, turned around 2021, obviously had a much better year with a team that had been kind of pulling up some of the younger guys. I don't think last year's Stanford team was the Stanford team that was supposed to make it to Omaha. I think that was supposed to be the preamble to this year's Stanford team. I think this year's Stanford team is a lot better than last year's Stanford team. And the fact that Tech lost to that Stanford team at a home super regional last year, I mean, if I was going to be an alarmist, I would say that's a pretty red flag, big red flag for where the direction of your program is headed. But with that said, I'll back off the alarm a little bit. Like, Tadlock will probably have this team in competition for a host bid come the end of the year.
Yeah, and I think maybe that was just like a little bit of a coming out party for Stanford. They're pretty much consistently a top five team across the board in other rankings. Yeah. Including ours, they're number five for us.
Stanford's not that far removed from being ranked number one. Like in 2018, I think they were the number one team in the conference. Oh. It's not like they were a garbage team or something.
Right.
Like, they had a new head coach. They had a coach that was there for, you know, a really long time heading towards retirement that killed the recruiting classes. So like, you know, the new staff had to come in and really revamp the recruiting. So like there was a noticeable dip in what happened in Palo Alto. So let's leave it at that. Like, this was not the best Stanford team we've ever seen that came in there and beat them. All right, let's look elsewhere across the country. I'm curious to talk a little bit about the American. I think I've always seen the American as one of the most fun conferences in college baseball. It's because it always felt like, and it always had been basically since the second year of its founding, a multi-bid league, oftentimes 3-4 bids. Last year was a 2-bid league only because USF had a Cinderella run in the conference tournament. No Tulane, no Houston, no Wichita State. None of these teams made the NCAA tournament. And should we be worried? I mean, is this the year that the American is a one-bid league? Or is this the year where we see a resurgence of teams like Wichita State, which we have ranked in our top 50, Tulane, which we have just outside of our top 50, maybe a UCF or USF? Like, what do you think? Are you buying or selling the American right now?
I would be selling right now. I mean, especially because of all the teams that are about to leave here soon. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like there is kind of some, like there are some good teams right below the top. Of course, ECU is like the team to beat lately in the American. But yeah, like Wichita State's right there in the top 50, you said, and Tulane's right there. Houston should be always pretty close to being competing that for that because they are in Houston, which is a hotbed for talent because the fact that it's in Texas.
They won 20 games last year, though. They just had such a bad year last year.
It's something that I want to do a deeper dive into, maybe figure out what's going on with Houston because they should be a really good team because they're right there in Houston, kind of like Rice, but Rice has had some other problems. And you don't want me to compare them to because they're rivals, but you know, who will? Oh, well.
Yeah, I feel like someone in the Houston area should be a top-tier baseball school. And so that hasn't happened in the last couple of years.
Maybe that's a sign of LSU, A&M, Texas, TCU, all these schools around here coming into Houston and rating it. Maybe that's drawing out Houston, like talent from away from University of Houston. So who knows? I personally love Tulane's jerseys and everything about Tulane. So
yeah, it's like they have Omaha caliber uniforms. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they are top tier when it comes to the powder blues and greens and things that they can put on a uniform. But
in an attempt to be as unbiased as possible, I am a fan of Tulane because of their jerseys alone. Yeah. So I would support a resurgence of Tulane baseball because it's more fun when the green wave is mad.
you know who's not a fan of Tulane baseball is Mississippi State. I watched that series last year at the Dune, and there was a whole lot of chirping. It was a very heated series last year.
It's exciting when that happens, though.
Yeah, and I think that's like, I think I agree. I'm probably selling the American right now, but I will say the American has enough prestige and enough teams in good regions that they can schedule well, and that all it takes is one good non-conference season. Like if they win a couple of series early on, all of a sudden that just elevates the whole conference and they're going to be an easy multi-bid league. And that's kind of what fell apart for them. Last year, Tulane lost at Mississippi State, UCF. Lost a series against Auburn, if memory serves me right. Like they had a couple of opportunities, but just couldn't quite follow through, cash those in. So they'll give themselves a fighting chance because they schedule pretty well. All right. I think let's move on to the top 50 and let's wrap up with the top 50. We have a brand new top 50 on our website, collegebaseball.info. And I don't know, I feel like I say this every year, but this is just like an impossible task. I think that's like part of what makes us different is that we do 50 teams, but 50 teams when it's preseason is brutal. Like at least during the season, you can go off of resumes and like, you know, there's data. This is so much projection and prediction of rotations and trying to figure out who's lost more and who's bringing in more, things like that. So,
and sometimes it doesn't matter. Like you have like someone coming in with a really good arms and they get hurt or something. Like there's always something that messes up our rankings.
Yes, and already has, because we released these rankings before Peyton Powlett's injury at Arkansas, and we had Arkansas ranked at number 4, and the reality is when you lose a guy like Powlett, that's gonna ding you a few spots. I do think Arkansas had a decent amount of pitching depth, and like I don't want to piss off too many Arkansas fans, but like when you lose a guy like Powlett, that is bad for your team. Like that is not a hot take. Like that is like the reality of it. So we have them at 4. I don't know, probably drop them 3 to 5 spots losing a guy like Powlett, just because there's some more question marks in the front end of that rotation. But Let's start at the top. Texas, number one. We've talked about it. We got some crap. Everyone loves talking trash on Twitter. And the thing that like I got the most being the guy running the Twitter account is like, well, when are we going to learn? When are we going to pretend that Texas has done anything? It's like, all right, did you forget that like they were one of the last four teams in the College World Series? Like, right? Like they
and returned all that talent.
Yes, and they took Mississippi State to the wire. Like they forced Mississippi State into an elimination game. Like it's like this is a good baseball team. I'm not gonna say they're gonna make it to Omaha and win the national championship because that's not how our sport works. There's enough randomness that stuff can go wrong. But I'm gonna say like I would be stunned if they do not have a successful season. Like they're going to be ranked top 25 throughout the year. I think they'll probably have a host bid. Like I'm not going to go and say guarantee, but I'm going to say I'd be pretty darn sure that they're going to be hosting.
That's not crazy to say, though. Like, that's a pretty measured take. Like, and that's, like, they're a really good team, and, like, it's fine to say that they'll probably be in the top 25 the whole year. People are just – I think people probably are just kind of annoyed, tired by the Texas getting overhyped in football, especially on Twitter. People kind of do that a lot. Texas does get overhyped in football in the preseason.
Yeah.
And so preseason expectations are always just like a thing for Texas sports. But this is real. Like this is probably a bona fide top 10 team.
A team that has good players and that have won a lot of games. Like this is a real college baseball
experienced team. Senior. Yeah.
With that said,
we're not alone.
I don't think this is a year where there is a clear, huge gap between Texas and the following teams. I think I personally love the ceiling of Vanderbilt's rotation, who we have number two, Christian Little, Patrick Riley. I think, I mean, that was another thing we got like, oh, are you going to pretend that Vanderbilt didn't just lose Kumar Rocker? And like, you know, like, it's like, no, we're not going to pretend that. The reality is that Vanderbilt, Vanderbilt brings in the best pitching talent in the country year in and year out. Like their MLB rep for the last decade has shown that. The fact that they did it last year, they made two guys that were two of the best three pitchers in the country last year. Christian Little, Patrick Riley are less proven. Christian Little had some freshman hiccups last year, but he was 17, I think, when he showed up to campus. I mean, he was a pretty young guy. Like he is going to be a star for Vanderbilt, whether that happens early enough in the season for Vanderbilt to hold on to this type of ranking, I think is a legitimate question mark. I think come the end of the year, if he stays healthy, he's going to be a big time pitcher for the Commodores.
Yeah. And I'm not one to doubt Tim Corbin's recruiting and development. So
yeah. What fraction of your preseason rankings are faith in a head coach? I feel like that's like one of those things that like I find myself thinking about and like, you know, and like that was my biggest issue with our ranking of Texas Tech was like, I believe in Tim Tadlock. I don't know if I believe in this team. So where do I put Texas Tech? And that was a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, it was like TCU all those years that Schloss was there with Sarluce as like the pitching coach, and A&M with Childress as the head coach. He's like a pitching guy. Like there's certain coaches you can just trust that are going to develop talent the right way throughout the offseason and throughout their time there at the school. So yeah, I it's hard to doubt Tim Tadlock and Tim Corbin. There's a lot of Tims, I guess.
Can we take a zoom out really quick? Like, I feel pretty confident that if Schlossnagel's TCU teams hadn't knocked out A&M of three postseasons, Childress wouldn't have been fired because he probably would have made it to two more College World Series in that time if they'd beaten TCU in a couple of those. Or at least one of those was a super, one of those is a regional, one of those is in the College World Series, or was it two supers?
I think it was two supers because it was one super in Fort Worth, one in College Station.
That's right.
And then a regional.
In the College World Series.
Yeah.
So Childress wins a couple more of those. He gets a couple more trips to the College World Series. Anytime you get there, you always have a chance. Maybe he wins a game or two. Maybe A&M wins a national championship. Obviously, that's a huge what if in this case. But just saying, if Schloss hadn't had those big wins and trips to Omaha under his belt, TCU, Childress probably wouldn't have gotten fired. So in some ways, it's like anime style, like Schloss beating his like future, like the head coach at his future job having to like defeat his rival in order to like steal his job in some ways. Like it's just a weird scenario when you can like very clearly draw A to B. Like Shalosh would not have gotten Childress's job had Shalosh not beaten him a couple of times.
that is pretty weird to think about. Yeah. It's like some big brain stuff. You got to connect the dots.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go back to the top 25, where we have Mississippi State defending national champions at number 3, Arkansas at number 4, probably deserve to be a few spots lower at this point, Stanford number 5. Let's stop here at number 6, LSU, because LSU, another team with a new head coach, Jay Johnson, coming over from Arizona, who had a nice little run to Omaha last year. Jay Johnson bringing what feels like half of the team to Baton Rouge with him from Arizona. I don't know. Like this offense at LSU is going to be just unbelievably good. Like the combination of power and hit per average in this offense is going to make this LSU team, I think, going to give some of these SEC aces a real run for their money. We have 3-4 preseason All-Americans amongst this group, Trey Morgan at first base, Dylan Cruz in the outfield. Jacob Berry. I'm super excited to see these guys, what they can do. And I'm a believer in Jay Johnson. So that's what I think was partially inspired this high ranking.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's a little bit different though, seeing like, I mean, Jay Johnson is the first year head coach after Maneri had been there for a long time and got fired in the offseason. Fired or retired? I forget.
Yeah, it won in the same.
Yeah. Asked to leave.
They let him retire because of what he'd done for the program.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not often that you see a first year head coach in the SEC with such high expectations. It'd be interesting to do a deeper dive into that in the next few weeks. But he's won the transfer portal this offseason, and bringing a lot of those his players with him has made this a really stiff lineup. So it'll be interesting.
Another team that we have in our top 10. So we have Tennessee at number 7. And I was just as we were recording this podcast, I'm seeing some reporting saying that Blake Tidwell might be out for the beginning of their season, who we have a first team All-American right now. So like, if that's the case, see what type of injury it is, see how long it is, see if it's real. I don't know. I haven't checked these sources, but Tennessee, we might end up having to drop back down depending on what they can get out of him. We have Georgia Tech at number 8, which I think is like 2 standard deviations above what most people have. I am really excited about this team. I think at least in part, I am excited because I love watching Kevin Pareda catch and Kevin Pareda hit. His hit tool is more advanced than a lot of the other of the elite catchers out there. I mean, there's Susak and Logan Tanner and Dunhurst, and there's a lot of really great college catchers right now, but Kevin Pareda's hit tool is pretty elite for a college catcher. But I'm also really curious, and I think I'm pretty high on this Georgia Tech team because I don't see a lot of elite teams in the ACC. I think Florida State's pitching staff, which we have Florida State at number 10, probably going to be a little bit more consistent than Georgia Tech's, but I think Georgia Tech, this is an opportunity for them to kind of return to that top 5 status they had in 2019. I think that this Georgia Tech team has a lot of potential and a pretty high ceiling.
Yeah, agreed. I'm excited.
We touched on Texas Tech, which we have down at 20, skimming through. I think other notable things that we have about our rankings, we have 4 teams from the Big West. That's like, I don't know. That's a novelty at the very least. We have UC Irvine at 21, back-to-back 28-29, Long Beach and UC Santa Barbara. And then sneaking down towards the back end of the top 50, we have Cal Poly at 49, who has Brooks Lee playing for his dad there, which we will have a piece out featuring Brooks Lee coming in the next week or two. So be on the lookout for that. I think that the talent is getting there. I think the thing that I am now super excited for week one, like what a way to start the season off, Long Beach State going to the Dude, playing at Mississippi State. That's going to be, I think, just an elite series to start the year. So I think that there's a lot to be excited about with the Big West and some opportunities for those big non-conference wins, which If you remember in 2020, Long Beach State hosted Mississippi State and beat Mississippi State 2 out of 3. 2021, Long Beach State had one of the wildest seasons, one of the last teams back on the field, didn't play any non-conference, almost made it to the tournament as an at-large team even with that, but didn't quite get enough momentum behind that with the Big West history, the recent history not being so great. Now they're back to their elite non-conference scheduling, and I think they have a lot to prove. I think they thought they should have been in the tournament last year. I think they have a good argument for that. I think that they're worthy of they were worthy of a bid last year. So I'm really excited to see how that series plays out.
Yeah, it'll be just interesting to see, like, having some time on the practice field, how that would have changed things. Like, yeah, they also you said they started real late. So yeah,
they were having Zoom meetings in like January, I think. Like, you know, like they were like weeks before the season, had not met as a team yet last year. So it was brutal for them. I think they were in, I think it was the city of Long Beach had them kind of cooped up a little bit. So really curious to see what they can do this year. All right. Anything else you want to talk about from the top 50? I think you at home, you should check it out. We're the only one that really goes through and ranks the top 50 in a meaningful way. There is one other top 50 out there in a preseason ranking that I don't think is particularly good. I won't name them by name. They moved to top 25 during the regular season. So we're the only top 50 out there that really gives it the old college try. But check out collegebaseball.info for all the full details on the top 50. Kyle, thanks for joining me. Looking forward to another great season of college baseball.
Yeah, let's get after it.
Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. If you haven't already, follow us on social media at collegeballnat. Our website with all of our content is collegebaseball.info. Please rate and review the podcast. It helps us get it out there. And as always, have a great week.